when I lost my leg, I was told I couldn't run or couldn't swim. And then probably like you saw the Ironman World Championships on TV. And so I was like, oh, I got to do this. I got to learn how to run, bike, and swim. For me, it was like the technology was so important because I have to have different legs made for the different events. So I have a run leg and I have a bike leg, but swim, I don't have a special right. leg for it. I just remember my first goal was to run 100 yards. I took my leg off. I was so excited about it, but it was bloody from one end to the other. But it's like anything in life, you know, you start small, work hard, and that consistency will get you to where you want to be. And so luckily, I've gotten to do 25 full Ironman races.
Wow.
This is for the others out there, the other ambitious people who want to play at a higher level in their life. It's time to get curious and get real. Join me, and together, let's find the others. Today, I'm stoked to bring you into an inspiring conversation I had with Jeff Glassbrenner. Jeff is no stranger to adversity. After a tragic farming accident as an 8-year-old, he was forced to overcome more as a child than most of us encounter our entire lives. Jeff lost his right leg below his knee and quickly realized that a lot more had changed than just his physical abilities. He's needed to rely on others more than ever to figure out how to live a new life as an amputee. But Jeff has also learned how to attack any struggle he's encountered with laser focus. As a result, he's accomplished things that many of us only dream about. He's a decorated professional athlete, winning the College Wheelchair Basketball National Championship, during which he set a scoring record of 63 points and 27 rebounds in one game. He also played professionally in Europe for 3 years, and he's a 3-time Paralympian and 2-time world champion. Jeff is also a 25-time Ironman triathlete, which is absolutely nuts. He's a driven hiker and climber, and he's on his way to completing the Explorer's Grand Slam, which is an adventurous challenge to reach the North and South Poles and the top of the highest peaks on all 7 continents, meaning all 7 summits. But most importantly, Jeff is a dedicated stay-at-home dad to his daughter Grace, his son Gavin, while his wife Elizabeth runs a successful tech company in Little Rock, Arkansas. We talked all about his journey and his mindset from navigating this traumatic event as a child and how he used that as fuel for growth and how it shaped him into the man that he is. Give Jeff a follow on Instagram at Team Glass. The link is in the show notes. And without further ado, let's jump into this conversation with Jeff Glassbrenner. Jeff, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you here. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
So this is really exciting. I love the podcast where I'm connecting with a person for the first time on the podcast as well. So it's a fun way to explore and have a connection conversation and really dive right beneath the surface. So it's great to meet you. I'm looking at your background here of framed USA jerseys and cover of Sports Illustrated and some medals and photos, and it looks like quite an illustrated wall back there, which is pretty awesome and probably not something that you may have thought that you would have filled your wall with.
Not at all. This is actually my man cave here in my gym. So every morning I get to wake up and head to my man cave gym and get to remind myself of where I've come and kind of where I want to go.
Amazing. And you were just telling me right before we started rolling that the Sports Illustrated cover that I see back there, which is just the most epic shot. You said it was a full circle moment for you. Tell me why that was a full circle moment for you.
Well, I don't know if you know too much about my story, but I lost my leg when I was 8 years old. I grew up in Wisconsin and helped my dad out on the farm. And we were supposed to go cut some hay. And so we did. And we got to the field cutting some hay and we hit a rock. And so my dad, you know, hey, can you help me out? Can you remove the rock? And so I went off to my safe spot, went around the tractor, removed the rock, and then went to get back onto my safe spot so we could continue on. And before I reached there, my dad had turned on the machine and my pant leg became entangled in the power takeoff. And basically what happened is the tractor took my leg off like a pencil sharpener. And so I just remember there laying on the ground, you know, really confused what just happened. I remember looking 10 feet away and I could see my shoe, you know, with my foot still in it. So it was, it was pretty, pretty crazy day. But my dad luckily held it all together and applied a human hand tourniquet, which later on saved my life. And so they took me to the hospital and spent 47 days there. And they told me when I left the hospital, I could never play any sports. You know, they handed me a sheet of paper and said, you know what, this is your new life. You know, if you play life safe, you'll be okay. And yeah, and so when I look at this Sports Illustrated, you know, that's a full circle moment because you know, she told me I couldn't, and I proved that I could.
Oh, so much to unpack there. So you said you're eight years old when the accident happened?
Yeah. So just a normal farm boy. Yep. 8 years
yeah.
old. Yeah.
And you obviously, and you have the memory of it. Did you just go into shock right away? Were you in pain? Like what happens when in the moment of that instance?
Shock. You know, I just remember there just being, what's going on, you know, but I remember my body getting really hot, but I remember, you know, crying to my dad that I'd never be able to run or never be able to swim. You know, normal kid things, you know, you're worried about, you know, what's right in front of you, not the long picture. But I just remember dad just like, you know, keeping it together. You go, son, you know, that's just let's get through this, and then we'll figure the rest out, you know. And so
right.
That was pretty incredible that he, you know, I don't know how he did it, but he was pretty amazing.
Yeah. And then you said 47 days in the hospital.
Yeah, 13 different operations. And, you know, it's kind of funny, you know, people are like, you know, being in the hospital, that was the worst thing, you know, and I'm like, no, it was really cool. You know, people stop by, they bring me Star Wars action figures or Star Wars ships, you know, and so it was kind of a fun time. But the not so fun part was when I left the hospital. And so, yeah, my life was completely different then. And so both mentally, physically, emotionally, all of that. And so I just kind of had to deal with that in a different way, you know?
Right. So like, I'm just trying to think about this mindset. You're normal kid, you're playing sports, active around 8 years old, super young. And then all of a sudden your leg gets taken away from you. What are you able to, were you fit for a prosthetic? Are you in a wheelchair after that coming out of the hospital?
Yeah. So, you know, the technology is much better than it was back
right.
then, you know,
I can imagine
it's when I lost it. So basically it was almost like whittling out of the wood, you know, it took me 2 months to get it a little bit better than that. But, yeah. But it was, you know, take me 3 months to get my leg. And by the time I got it, I'd already grown a half an inch or something. Right. So, it was continual, you know, pain going there and getting the prosthetic made and stuff. So it took me about 6 months to get a leg made, but I didn't like the leg right away because, you know, it wasn't my real leg. So that was, you know, hard to deal with. It's like, I was just kind of, give me crutches. I don't want that thing. And then my parents were like, no, you're gonna, you know, we spent a lot of money for this. You're going to use it. You know?
Yeah.
But I was really lucky. I think a big thing for me was my parents. You know, they gave me that tough love. You know, I remember one day, you know, sitting on the couch, you know, barking an order into my mom for a Coke, and she hands me the Coke, and she's like, "This is the last Coke. You're gonna get your own Cokes and do things for yourself, you know, on your own." She went on to tell me that I was no different than anyone else except for my negative attitude. So that kind of changed my mindset of like, you know, I'm going to have to figure this out. And so,
yeah, that's interesting. So there was like a shift from almost like from victim mentality into victor mentality into, okay, like it's up to me and I can write my story the way I want. So it seemed like that was and I was reading from the, an excerpt from your book, that moment with the Coke with your mom, it seemed like that was a moment where, What else came through in that moment? It was like a switch for you. It was a perspective shift in that moment.
It really was. I mean, because I mean, I really believe now, especially, you know, everything is a choice. You know, we can either choose to be that victim or we can choose to be the victor. And my mom wasn't going to let me choose. She was going to make me be independent. Her big thing is she told me when she left the hospital, my favorite nurse, we were good friends before I left, and he told my mom, the biggest enemy of a kid with a disability are their parents. You know, they can either choose to do things for them or they can choose to let them be independent and then figure it out on their own. She goes, there are many nights that she go in the room and cry and, you know, want to help me out, want to give me that Coke, but she knew she wasn't doing me any favors.
Wow. Yeah, thinking about from the parents, you know, your parents' perspective as well, what a challenging thing to go through for those inner battles as well of maybe the short-term gratification for being able to help and be that caretaker. I think that's interesting, you know, something that I can relate to. One of the things that I've learned in the coaching and consulting world and just like in helping people in general, like sometimes you have to quote unquote be the bad guy to really help them. Like you have to be someone that you might not want to be. As humans, our initial reaction with someone when they're going through something hard is to go console and to try to help and to soothe. But actually sometimes, and I just take away my experience in like facilitating breath work and working with people through some kind of deeper subconscious journeys, is like giving them the space to process on their own. Is it's kind of counterintuitive, because like you see someone crying in the middle of a breath work session and you want to go over and like console them. Exactly. It's okay. But actually being able to allow them to process their own emotions and to feel that inner confidence is the biggest gift you can give them. But it's counter to like how we want people to feel good.
Exactly. So that was hard, but I'm glad that they took that approach.
Yeah, truly. And then, so, you know, you're growing up through your adolescence, your middle school, your high school years. And was there a moment where you're like, okay, cool, like I want to play sports and I'm not able to, or I want to do something differently here? Or like, take me through the mindset as you're going through your adolescence.
But I had to go back to school, and I was the only one at our small little school that was different. And so I got picked on, I got teased and tripped for being different and made fun of. And so I didn't escape all those fun things. So, you know, I had my legs made with cosmetic covers, you know, I wore pants so people wouldn't see I was different. And so I was very self-conscious then. And then the worst thing about it was my sister, she was the best athlete in school. So, you know, I was always happy to go to her games, you know, just cheering her on and all that. But just really, you know, I wanted to play too, you know? And so, but I was always her biggest fan, always cheering her on. But it was, no one wants to be outdone by their sister, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly. And, so, but it wasn't until I went to college that, okay, that I had that kind of transformation in the sports and kind of another aha moment. I was hopping, my leg was hurting one day in college. And so I was studying and headed to the restroom, and then I'm hopping down the hallway and this kid stops me. He's like, well, let's go play basketball. And he goes, no, he first, he's like, you're missing your leg. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I am, you know, I'm like Einstein. But then he's like, well, let's go play wheelchair basketball. And I'm like, never heard of such a thing. And so he brought me to the practice and I got to see him play wheelchair basketball for the first time. You know, I thought everyone with a disability was told to play it safe. You know, these guys were out there smashing each other up and, you know, scoring and having a good time. And I was like, wow, I could probably do this too, you know? And so I was lucky to have a coach that really believed in me right from the beginning. And so he, you know, he saw that I had potential and he saw that I had talent and work ethic. So he brought me in and really worked with me individually and then with the team, and then it started building from there.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. It's just like, it's so moving to me. These little moments of just like the timing of you deciding to go to the bathroom when you did and you hopping,
right,
versus going with either putting your leg back on or wheeling or however you were there. And that perfect timing to be able to then introduce you to this thing at that right time is just, it's so inspiring to see that those little things can make a whole course trajectory change.
That guy that stopped me in the hallway happened to be an amputee too. And so he was the one that brought me there. And so it was really neat. Years later, he played for the Australian national team. And so we both played center. So I got to have a jump ball against him at the World Championship.
Oh, that's so cool. That's so cool. So you're
that was a cool, yeah, it's like, all right, you know. So I learned everything from him and then we won the gold medal. So yeah.
I was gonna say, I hope you beat him.
We did. I even got the jump ball, so that was good.
There we go. So I mean, so it began, you know, when you first played wheelchair basketball, did you think like, oh, I want to play this all the time, or I want to be the best in the world at this, or I wanted to see how far I can take, or this is fun and like let's see what happens?
No, right from the day one, I'm always a competitive guy. And so when my coach put the goal in front of me of making the national team, I didn't just want to make the national team, I wanted to be the best player in the national team. And so for me it was just like, all right, he's given me that dream. And now we need to come up with that plan. And that was, you know, just through a lot of hard work. And, you know, lucky being a farm boy, I was used to that. And so if you work hard, you can be here. And so
right,
that's what we do. We work hard, you know?
Amazing. And so you went and accomplished that and went to the national team and won gold medals.
Yeah. So I was on the national team for 14 years. So I'm a three-time Paralympian, a two-time world champion, and a five-time national champion. So and I also have an individual scoring record for wheelchair basketball. In the 2004 National Championship game, I scored a record-setting 63 points and had 27 rebounds.
Let's go.
That was a good day.
That's a good day.
But I am a team player. I want you to know that I did have one assist. Very, very important, for sure.
That's incredible. Dropping a 60-piece and 20 boards. Oh, that's incredible. I hope there's highlights. I got to check the highlights of that one. That's
awesome.
That's amazing.
It's fun, though. But, it's been a great journey. I got to play wheelchair basketball professionally overseas, 2 years in Madrid, 1 year in Italy, and so Rome. So
wow.
It opened up a whole new.
I'm really inspired by that too. Of just you, I mean, you became a professional athlete, and then obviously a competitive endurance athlete as well. Which I'm excited to hear about how what got you into endurance sports. I mean, candidly, for me and my cousin, who are both triathletes as well, and I just did my first full Ironman triathlon this past fall.
Which one?
You know, it was just I did it Arizona in November. Which was great, and so when I saw some of your, I think the photo of you crossing the finish line at Ironman, I'm like, oh, like that just touches me a little bit differently. So tell me about that. Like, was this while you were doing basketball or after basketball? You're like, all right, what's next? Like, what's the sequence of that?
It was while I was playing basketball, so I kind of get into it in 2006, So. When I lost my leg, I was told I couldn't run or couldn't swim. And those were my two favorite things as an 8-year-old. And then probably like you saw the Ironman World Championships on TV. And so I was like, oh, I got to do this. I got to learn how to run, bike, and swim. And, it was a little bit harder than that hour program led you to believe, you know. And then you do the research on it and you're like, dang, that's a 2.4-mile swim. And then 112 bike ride. And then your marathon. And so... it's like that big thing in front of you. But like you've learned, it's just, you don't take the whole thing. You break it down and do it that way. And so for me, it was like the technology was so important because I have to have different legs made for the different events. So I have a run leg and I have a bike leg, but swim, I don't have a special leg for it.
Got it.
But so I had to learn how to, run again. And so it's kind of like NASCAR, if you run a 10-minute mile, the leg needs to be set up in a certain way. But if you run an 8-minute mile, it's a different one altogether.
And then the sprinters, I know sprinters in the Paralympic Games too, it's probably a whole different leg for sprinters too.
Whole different ball game. And so it's just, you have to be really, adapt to changing with that technology and then understanding how to use it. And so that was, I just remember my first goal was to run 100 yards and I took my leg off. I was so excited about it, but it was bloody from one end to the other, so it didn't fit right. Didn't feel right. So we had to, go back to the drawing board and, but it's like anything in life, you start small, work hard, and that consistency will get you to where you want to be. And so, luckily I've gotten to do 25 full Ironman races. So
wow.
That's
different, man. I'll tell you, I might be on the one and done train for myself personally. I love the 70.3s. one and done for a while.
Yeah, it's hard to train that long, that far, but
that's the thing for me right now, at least with being in the infancy stages of having a startup business. It's the time commitment it's wild because you're spending your weekends on long bike rides and runs, and during the week you're fitting in training rides on your bike trainer or lifting session, swim. So for that reason right now, I'm like, I think I'm going to put this down for now. But the 70.3s are a lot, which is wild to think even. It's like, oh yeah, 70.3, the half Ironman, that's no big deal. I can go do that. That's fun. But then the full is like, this is a different thing. But I spent six years on my path towards getting to full Ironman from dealing with injuries that I had and some chronic pain and some health challenges. What'd you say? I had a couple different things, but I had a knee reconstruction, so ACL, LCL, MCL, meniscus, and then I had something called compartment syndrome, where the muscle compartment in my quad from a blunt force trauma from a couple football injuries. The muscle compartment filled with blood, so there was no blood flow going down to my leg. So they had to do an emergency surgery to do a fasciotomy to open up and relieve the pressure. Otherwise, I was like a few hours away from them having to amputate the leg entirely. We might have been having a conversation on a different in a different level, but. Thankfully, they were able to save the function of my leg, and then 2 years after that, I had appendicitis. This is I'm 20 years old at this point. I had appendicitis, and the doctor nicked an artery during the surgery, so I had internal bleeding, blood transfusion, extended stay in the hospital. So at that point, I'm like, 20 years old. I have chronic back pain from my knee surgery. My leg is still recovering, and now my overall, I'm just inflamed and not well. And and for that, for me at that point to think like similarly, I'd like to see Ironman triathlon, like that it was so big that it wasn't even in my field of vision to like, oh, this is possible. But what was doing like an Olympic distance triathlon. And the reason I picked that was because swimming and biking were low impact on my knees and I could do a lot of that training. And so I was like, oh, this could be good training. And then I did an Olympic distance triathlon and I caught the bug and was like, oh, I want to do that again. And then I did that again. And then after the first one, you're spent. And I'm thinking, how in the world does someone do a half Ironman, let alone a full? I can't even wrap my head around that. But even a half, like doing double that Olympic, that's crazy. But did another one with my cousin. And then we're like, oh, maybe it could be doable. So we signed up for the half. We did the half and we're like beat up. We're like, oh my God. There's no way doing double that for a full is just mental. There's no way. Did another couple halves over the next couple years and finally got to the point where like, you know what? Maybe we can send it. Like, let's go for it. And then signed up for the full. So it was, many, many years to get to that journey for that one. And so I'm sure you can relate as well of just like chunking it down step by step.
Exactly. So is that why you started the company then? The Edge Theory?
Exactly. Yeah. Because being on that health journey, I was forced to, similarly, I had doctors tell me you should pick up golf, like, pick up a non-contact sport. Yeah, exactly. They're just like, yeah, pick up golf. Cause I was sharing like, I want to climb mountains and do this and that. And they're just like, yeah, the best we can do is say like, here's like a super high ibuprofen for you. Like here's a super high milligram prescription of ibuprofen. Like, here you go. And I didn't want to accept that. And so I got into yoga, really opened the door for me to start to see how my body could actually move and shift and gain flexibility. And it was the first time I felt like my body not screaming at me. And then I kept doing yoga, ended up becoming a yoga instructor and just got on this path of health and wellness. And that led me to experiencing cold water immersion and breath work as two tools through a Wim Hof method retreat in Iceland that just like opened up. And the cold water was the thing that just helped me so much from a body standpoint, from a mental standpoint, from a mind body connection standpoint. And then training for the full Ironman with my cousin Rob, the first one, we were doing the ice baths and it shaved so much time off our recovery. And so that was when we were like, all right, we're like, this is so good. We got to share it with people and share it with, we got to make something that's better so we can use it and we can share it with people so that more people can use this. So that was what led to the inception, just kind of the merging of those two.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I've had it since that November and it's truly amazing. Yeah.
Amazing. Like, I love it.
Yeah. I have the sauna and then I have that. And so it's just like those two things I think are going to be putting years on my life for sure.
That's amazing. And I think that truly like, and it's part of our goal is to be able to provide those modalities, heat and cold therapy to get those in the homes of as many people as possible, make it continuously make it more and more accessible. That way we can just get people more access. So like you said, it's like, yeah, I can literally, this thing can put years on my life, not just on lifespan, but health span too, of just like how you can enjoy and how you can get the most out of it. Like for me, I'm playing for longevity. I say often like I'm playing. So, and I'm operating my life in a way so that I can play basketball in the driveway with my grandkids when I'm 90 years old. Like that's my goal, is longevity, lifespan, and health span, most importantly.
That's what I think more than anything is that quality,
Exactly.
I'm gonna be able to move the way I'm supposed to move,
And right.
Just being an amputee, I'm just, extra concerned too. I don't see a lot of older amputees out walking around and stuff like that. So I'm like,
right.
I'll see if I can be the first.
No doubt. I love it. So that, I mean, it's so inspiring. You say 25 time Ironman finisher.
Yes, sir. Yeah. So I've even done that Norseman Extreme, so extreme races over in Norway. And so,
So
yeah,
cool.
I've done
Did you get
Kona
to
twice.
Kona? Did you get to
Yeah.
Kona?
Yes, I did twice. Yeah. And so,
Twice.
yeah. So it was really neat. My sister even did too. So
Wow.
she's quite an athlete as well. So we've always been like, yeah, best friends with all that stuff. So that's cool.
That's fantastic. Now, mountain climbing. Let's talk about that. So
Yeah, so
it's fun
you
because,
climb mountains. Yeah.
yeah. It's I've my another way that my cousin Rob, my co-founder here, him and I have really bonded through the years is through mountain climbing. So we did together with a couple other members of our family, we did Mount Kilimanjaro in 2019,
Yeah.
which was awesome. And then we did Mount Rainier a couple years ago maybe, and so we're eyeing Aconcagua. We're eyeing Aconcagua, so
You should do it. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's a dusty mountain, but
okay.
it's beautiful. It's definitely doable. You can get in bad weather, so yeah. But it's the
It's not a
first.
technical climb. It's not a
Not
technical
at all.
climb, right? No, okay.
But it's challenging
Yeah.
because it's quite a bit at high in elevation, 22,800. So it's up there, but amazing people. Yeah, I mean that was fun. So 100%, you should do it.
I love it. So what got you into what mountain climbing like, and what mountains have you climbed?
Yeah, so I've done all the seven summits, so Everest and all the seven summits, and then I've skied to the South Pole. And what I'm trying to do is the Explorer's Grand Slam. So it's, the highest peaks in all seven continents, as well as skiing to the North and South Pole. I think there are less than 50 people that have done it.
Wait, so hold on. Tell me what that is. The Explorers, what's it called?
Called Explorer's Grand Slam.
Okay.
And so it's the North, skiing to the North and South Pole, as well as the
Skiing to
state.
the North and South Pole. So like,
Main
yeah,
home. Yep.
right.
Yep.
Getting to like the North Pole and the South Pole, like that point of the top and the bottom of the globe, essentially.
Exactly. And yeah,
Wow.
so Ali, yeah.
Wow.
So
So, and you said, oh, sorry, I think we got a little bit of a lag here. Can you hear me?
yep.
Okay, cool. So you said there's been fewer than how many people have done that? The Explorers Grand Slam?
I thought last time it was like 49 people, but it might be a little more here. So, I don't
Wow.
know. Less than 100 for sure.
Wow. That's just remarkable. So, wow. Do you have plans? Do you have a trip coming up to make an effort at North or South Pole?
Yeah, but well, I've been on the South Pole. So the North Pole I've been trying to do for the last 7 years, but it's been canceled because of COVID, and then now with Russia and Ukraine, it's pretty unique. We require the Russians to come in and make an ice runway for us, and then typically in the past there's a Ukrainian plane that has to take us to this Russian runway. So
Ah.
they're not really getting in right now. So it's gonna be a minute, I think. So,
Yeah. Okay. Dang. So you
hopefully that gets itself resolved, and then I'll go back after it. So,
I love it. And did you do the South Pole? That's in Antarctica.
yes, yeah, in
Did you do
18.
that? Did you do that when you climbed Mount Vincent, or was that separate trip?
Yeah, well, I did the same trip. You save a lot of money by doing the same trip and a lot of time. So.
Smart. Smart. Okay, cool. I'm taking notes over here because like you're doing some things that are inspiring me. Okay, cool. I like that. So you can do two birds with one stone: climb Mount Vincent, climb the tallest peak in Antarctica, one of the seven summits, and then ski to the most southern point of the globe.
But your edge theory will be some great training for Antarctica. I wish I would have had it back then, because I mean,
Yeah.
you just get used to that cold. It's like that mindset, and it's
Totally.
just like your body just becomes resilient. And so I think that's an advantage for you if you do that. You might have to do it more than my 4 minutes, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We work with and someone I've had on the podcast as well. His name's Akshay. Incredible guy, incredible story. I'll send you over his info, but he's attempting the first solo unassisted crossing of Antarctica. So
Hey,
he's yeah, so he's
did you do it this year?
he's planning it, I think, for
Next year.
Yeah, either this year or next year. He might have pushed it back for like logistics and funding. But he was saying, yeah, Fearvana is his brand and his Instagram, Fearvana. He talks all about the he was a Marine Corps vet, and he suffered from PTSD, and he was talking about you know, his whole thing is using fear is like is a gateway, and working with fear is a gateway to enlightenment, essentially. So he's preparing for the first ever 110-day solo coast to coast ski crossing of Antarctica. So never been done before. Right. So he's planning that, which is just absolutely wild. So he's a great guy to look into as well.
Cool.
It's so cool. So many people doing inspiring things. So. And is that photo of you on the cover of Sports Illustrated? Is that on Everest, or is that?
It's Everest. It's not on the summit, but it's on right. Kumbo Ice Falls. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I was figuring, on the ice falls. And so did you have multiple legs, different legs for Everest for different points, or were you all on that same leg for Everest?
Yeah. So for any time above base camp, I had that leg on. And so, but in the base camp, I had my normal everyday walking leg. Just I had to be really careful around the tents, because at the bottom of my foot, you know, there's crampons.
Right.
And so that's so good for the tents. So.
Yeah.
I believe there's a door.
That's incredible. Well, Jeff, this has been an amazing conversation. I'm curious in parting, like what's some advice you might offer to someone who is going through something challenging right now, whatever it might be. What's advice you would offer someone that's going through a challenging moment in their life?
I would say seek out a person that has gone through what you're going through. And so then I think you can get, you know, an understanding of maybe what's ahead of you, you know, and better ways to cope with whatever you're dealing with. Like, I mentor a lot of amputees. And so, you know, I'm trying to, you know, teach them not only about today, but, you know, the future, and like how can you protect your body? How can you, you know, make sure that, you know, your vehicle is good enough to, you know, support for a long life, you know, because a lot of people, you know, amputees, especially, they'll get, you know, overweight and stuff. And so their leg doesn't fit right. And so, you know, it's a big challenge for them going forward. So for me, if someone's going through, you know, something, I want to, you know, see the most successful person that has dealt with that, and then kind of see if I can, you know, learn from them and do all of that. But I have a question for you. I'm trying to get into the yoga spirit. Like, the hardest thing that I've done today is those three breaths with you this morning. I was like, let it go. Yeah, I just, how do you take that, you know, ability to kind of like slow down? You know, how do you get into, I know you just probably just go to a class, but how do you find that?
It's a great question. I think that for me, I view it as, it's introspective, right? It's building this introspective muscle and this curiosity of like, what's going on inside of my body here? Right? Cause we're living up here very stimulated in our mind, and we're outward focused. We're going, especially some of us that are focused on like big challenges or exercise that, but it also, like, those are great pathways of going internal. Like, when you're digging deep on the back half of the marathon, when you're at mile 18 of the marathon and Ironman, like, you're deep in an intimate place within yourself. Like, you get to know yourself very well. It's a mirror. The same with the cold. These are mirrors. And so for me, I like to use those mirrors as a way of, what does this challenge or this experience, what is it teaching me about my physiology? What is it teaching me about my ability to regulate stress and work with these edges? When we say a lot, find your edge is one of our tagline. Like, where is that edge? And so for you, it's like, it's a great question. And even saying in those couple deep breaths, like, that's an edge, right? Okay. That's challenging. That's difficult. So I would approach it with that same curiosity of any type of challenge of like, how can I go a little bit further into this, and what can I learn about myself through this exploration? So that's how I got into it. I got into it because I did a yoga class and I was laying down in Shavasana in the end, you know, at the end when you're laying down with your eyes closed. And for the first time, I experienced, like I mentioned earlier, my body not screaming at me in stillness. And I was like, oh, that felt really good. Like, what is that feeling like if I can cultivate more stillness? And there's a big paradox in dichotomy. We could talk a little while about this, but of slowing down to speed up, and the idea of finding and cultivating that stillness that then allows you to go out and to move even faster. So I view it as one of the greatest assets and weapons that I have, and why I close my eyes in meditation every morning, even if just for 5 deep breaths, but just building that muscle of conscious introspection and beginning to understand and be comfortable of exploring like what's going on in the internal here. It's just not a muscle that's really taught or talked about a whole lot in our society. So it's something that I've been on a quest to build more of.
Same here. It's so much so that my son and I, for a spring break, we're going to Bali. We're going to do like a day and a half, like yoga class or like a seminar or whatever. So,
that's great.
So I can get in there to kind of slow down. I think as I get older, I think I need to start, you know, thinking about slowing down a little bit. You know, I'm so focused on the next thing. And so I want to be able to bring it back, you know, and just kind of.
I love it. Have you ever tried breath work before? Have you done like a breathing journey or breath work?
I've not. I've done a Wim Hof. I did it yesterday for the first time. That little sequence of 30 breaths. Hold it. I was like, oh my, I can't do it.
yeah. Well, it's called breath work for a reason because it's a workout. It's hard, but I'd love for you to join one of our virtual. We do a monthly virtual community breathing session that's free to our community. So and you connect with Sam Whiting, who's our director of performance here at Edge. He was one of the first North America Wim Hof Method instructors back in 2016, 2017, something like that. And so he's really experienced. I went through and I became a Wim Hof Method instructor as well, but he's got a great way, and especially in athletic, because he comes from a alpine ski racing competitively. And so he's got that kind of like that same kind of athletic mindset. But we talk a lot about the breathing mechanics and breathing 101 essentially, because we have 12 pounds of breathing muscles within our body, but we don't work those out. And there's just such compelling science and research around how we can actually improve our endurance without doing cardio workouts, but by just doing breathing workouts and strengthening our breathing muscles. Because you think about it, it's like our breathing muscles and our diaphragm helps us with digestion, with detoxification, with energy, with all these different things, but we're not strengthening that. It's a muscle. It's literally a muscle in our body, but we're not strengthening that. We're not doing workouts for those muscles. So there's some cool mindset shifts around that, and then some deeper breathing exercises that we do and that we share that I think could be interesting, because that's also a great gateway, because it gives your mind something to focus on, like a goal to focus on and go right for, and treating it like a workout in that way, which you're no stranger to doing. But then as a result, you can start to access more of that stillness. That's like a byproduct of it. So that's why I love breath work, and I love facilitating breath work as well. So I'd love for you to come join one of our sessions.
That'd be cool. Yeah.
Sweet.
That'd be awesome.
Well, Jeff, what a pleasure it's been, man. Thank you so much. I hope the first of many conversations. Love to do one in person with you. Maybe if you get out to the West Coast, or when I'm traveling by your area sometime next, we can do something in person and film something a bit more. But appreciate you coming on, sharing your story, and being such an inspiration to so many people.
Thank you. Appreciate all you do. Have a good one.
All right, Jeff. Take care. Until next time.